Welcome to Human Anatomy class, about 2:31, and it's October, who knows the date? 7. Let's take a look at the schedule. Here's our schedule. And that's the wrong one. We do not want spring. We want fall. Okay, here's the fall syllabus and schedule. So indeed, today is the 7th, and this is our last lecture on muscles, and that also means that on Monday is your next lecture exam, on 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11, and we're going to finish up 11 today. And also, don't forget, next week we have the second lab practicum. So those of you that have Monday labs will have a lecture exam and a practicum same day. The Wednesday labs will get their practicum on Wednesday. All right, so prepare wisely over the weekend for those exams. Okay? Anybody have a question regarding the practicums or exams? Prepare for the practicum by using the lab manual. Prepare for the lecture exam using the exam study guides. All right. So that's the best advice I have. All right. Well, let's continue on. I'll put this away. And sign-in sheet is going around. Alright, some things I did not mention last time, which are pretty important. Alright, so we should know the difference between synergist muscles, antagonist muscles, prime movers, and fixators. So synergist muscles are two muscles that work together to perform the same kind of motion. And if they're performing the same kind of motion, pretty much the design and by structure, they have to be in the same body compartment if they're working together. And we are familiar with the biceps brachii. Right? And there's another muscle in that group. Oh, this is even better. Okay. There's another muscle that's anterior to the humerus. Right. So here's the biceps brachii that's anterior to the humerus. Everybody, I think, can appreciate that. And then right underneath it, deep to the biceps brachii, but before you get to the humerus, there is another muscle, and that's called the brachialis. So they're right next to each other, the same body compartment. That means that they're going to have the same action. So if we want a good example of synergist muscles, we could say the biceps brachii and brachialis, because both will flex the elbow or flex the forearm. So that's a pretty good example of synergist muscles. We also looked at a couple others last time, and that was in the thigh, posterior thigh in particular. And if we look in the posterior thigh, remember the hamstring muscles? Starting medially, we have the semimembranosus and then semitendinosus, which is easy to see because of this big long tendon. You'll even see that in lab, a nice long tendon right here. And then laterally is the biceps femoris. So all of these, since they're in the same body compartment, what could you tell me? Are they synergists or antagonists? They're going to be synergists because they're in the same body compartment. Okay, so all of these hamstrings, right, will flex the knee, and they will also extend at the hip. But probably the most important, easiest motion to remember is flexion at the knee. That's probably the easiest one to know. All right, so if somebody asks you what is an antagonist of any of the hamstrings, like the membranosus, tendinosus, and biceps femoris, how would you try to figure out what an antagonistic muscle or muscle groups are? Okay, yeah, just flip the body over, right, because here is the posterior thigh. We just want to look at the anterior thigh to come up with some antagonists. And let's see what we got right there. Anterior thigh. Nice. Even nicer. All right, so here's your patella. So that's definitely anterior. And I see the quadriceps. And I only see three of the muscle bellies of the quadriceps because the intermedius is deep to the rectus femoris. But here's the rectus femoris, vastus lateralis, vastus medialis. And these extend the knee, right? So the hamstrings flex at the knee. The quadriceps extends at the knee. They're just at opposite body compartments. So they're going to be antagonistic to each other. All right, so how about, what's the relationship of the vastus lateralis to the vastus medialis? How would you describe the relationship in terms of function between these two muscles? I heard it someplace. They are synergists. Yeah, they're synergists because they're in the same body compartment. And also you'll know that they're synergists because they have the same insertion. There's a common tendon, namely tendon of the quadriceps that inserts into the patella. And since they have that common insertion, right, they're going to have the same motion. Okay. All right, so that's posterior thigh, anterior thigh. Last time I was talking about the hip. And what do we call a motion when I lift my knee up off the ground like that, using my hip? That's flexion at the hip. So what muscle is doing that? It's going to be an anterior compartment. And so here is the hip bone. So we're going to look at some muscles that are anterior to the hip. And the ones that I want you to know are the iliacus, which is attached to the ilium, and the psoas major, which is attached to some vertebrae, lumbar vertebrae. They come together and have a common insertion on the femur. So these are the prime movers for hip flexion. Where would we want to find a prime mover that's antagonistic to the iliopsoas? Posterior hip, all right? And so let's go see what we can find on that posterior hip. Posterior hip. Maybe I'll have to go to the large picture right here. All right, and on the posterior hip, we have the gluteus maximus. So that muscle is important for extending, right? Stepping down. That's the muscle that's contracting. Opposite body compartments. Let's pick a couple more examples. So here's, talked about synergists in the forearm, namely the biceps, brachii, and the brachialis. What's going to be antagonistic to the biceps and brachialis? Opposite body compartment, which will be the triceps brachii. Nice. All right, so how about another example? Here I see the latissimus dorsi. Big, strong muscle in the back. That's a muscle for extending at the shoulder. Who can show me what extension at the shoulder looks like? Okay. So if I'm in anatomic position and I raise my hands like this, that is flexion, and extension is bringing my hands back down to my sides, or even moving them posterior. That would be hyperextension. So the muscle for extension at the shoulder is the latissimus dorsi. Where would you want to find a muscle for flexion of the shoulder? Yeah, let's go to the anterior body compartment, and here is a muscle, almost looks the same, that's the pectoralis major. All right, so pectoralis major is for flexion, latissimus dorsi is for extension. Here I see the rectus femoris. When it contracts, that causes flexion of the spine. And where would we want to find muscles that extend the spine? So rectus abdominis for flexion. Where would we want to find extensors of the spine? Posterior body compartment, right? And I can't show you on this particular slide, but I'll show you in a second, right? And as I pull that slide up, we did talk about these muscles in lab. There's a whole bunch of them. There are many, 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 but I just want you to know one name for all of those muscles. Well, what's the name of all of those muscles? in the back. Erector spinae. All right, so erector spinae are antagonistic to the rectus abdominis, opposite body compartment. All right, so are you getting pretty much a good feel for antagonist muscles? Just opposite body compartment? So I think that's a really easy way to understand muscles, is by just flipping the body over, looking in the opposite body compartment, and think of things in terms of antagonistic pairs. A prime mover, if we think of muscles that are synergists, so there's got to be at least two muscles, right, that work together to perform the same motion, the prime mover is the one that produces the most motion, or is the one that participates the most in that particular motion, or the strongest muscle. And let's go back to the biceps brachii one more time. All right, we mentioned that there is a muscle in the anterior arm. So here's the biceps. Right underneath it, that is the brachialis. All right, so they're in the same body compartment, so they are synergists. And the brachialis is the stronger of the two. So the brachialis, this deep one right here and right here, you can see how wide it is actually the prime mover. Right? So because it's the stronger one of the two. That would be a really good example. There are a number of muscles that we call fixators. And fixators don't perform any kind of movement, but when they contract, they hold a bone or a group of bones stationary so that a muscle can pull on it. Right? So another muscle can use that bone as an origin so that bone doesn't move around. And so there are many muscles that will attach to the scapula and hold the scapula in position, keep it nice and steady so that you can use your arm, so you can flex and extend and circumduct your shoulder without the scapula moving. So all those muscles we would call fixators. All right, let's look at this nomenclature a little bit. Here's a list of how we can name muscles, and this is really handy to know. All right, sometimes we name a muscle by their location, and for instance, we've talked about a muscle already. The name is where its location. Anybody remember the name of a muscle we talked about today? Like biceps femoris? Biceps brachii, right? So the brachium is your arm, femoral region is your thigh. So that's really nice to know. Intercostals, costa is a rib. So there are muscles between the ribs. So that's a really nice hint as to how to name a muscle. Sometimes by the shape, we talked about the deltoid last time. Sometimes relative size is important. Like we just mentioned the gluteus maximus, but there are two other muscles that are in that group, but they're smaller, right? And the next smallest one is the minimus, and there's one even smaller than that, okay? Brevis. Okay, we did talk about direction of fascicles, like the rectus abdominis, all the fascicles are parallel to each other. Oblique, what does oblique mean? Does anybody remember what oblique means? So you know what plane this is, right? I look at my hand. What plane is this? Sagittal, here is. Transverse, here is. Coronal. Well, you can have a plane that's in between some of those. For instance, here's a sagittal, and we can rotate it a little bit. Right now, is that a sagittal plane? Or a transverse plane? Or a coronal plane? It is an oblique plane, right? So oblique means at some strange angle compared to the normal axes of the body. And there are muscles that are arranged on an angle, and we're going to call those oblique muscles. And a really good example of that will be the stomach muscles. There are a number of stomach muscles that are like that. Let's take a look at some of those stomach muscles. All right, so here's that rectus abdominis once again. Look at these fascicles right here. This is the deepest layer of the muscle wall of the abdomen. And That forms these muscles, these fascicles are in a nice standard plane. What plane do you see these fascicles moving in? They're moving from right to left. This muscle, right, is these fascicles are in the transverse plane, so we call this the transverse abdominis. And the next one, the next superficial ones, are the internal oblique and external oblique. And what can you tell me about the arrangement of fascicles in the internal and external obliques? They don't line up exactly on a sagittal plane or transverse plane or coronal plane, so they are oblique because they're arranged at an angle to each other. And notice that the angle is about 90 degrees different from each other, and that's pretty important because that arrangement, right, gives some strength to the muscle wall of the abdomen. If all the fascicles were pointing in the same direction, even though there are three muscles, then the wall would not be as strong compared to if you have three different orientations of fascicles. That makes the wall really, really strong, those different layers. Okay. Okay, sometimes we use the attachment point, and really good examples that we have been using would be like the occipitofrontalis muscle, sternocleidomastoid. Many muscles use origin and insertion. Sometimes the number of origins is used. So if you're wondering why the biceps got its name, is because it has two different origins. The triceps has three different origins, and the quadriceps has four different origins. And then lastly, this is really nice, sometimes we name a muscle by its action, whether it's a flexor, extensor, adductor, or abductor. And when we name a muscle, right, then we automatically know what the action is. So that's really nice and simple. So let's try one right here. I don't think I've talked about this muscle, but you should tell me something about it. It's the extensor carpi radialis longus. Now that's a mouthful, but the title tells you everything you need to know about this particular muscle. Like for instance, what is its action? Extension, yeah, so that's in the name. And what does it extend? Carpal. And where do you find carpals? In your wrist, so it extends the wrist. So what is extension of the wrist? It is like that, right? That's extension, all right? But you have a number of extensor carpi muscles in your forearm, and this one happens to be on one side. And what side is it on? Yeah, well, I don't know if the radius is a side. The radius is a bone. I like that. It's a bone, but what side is the radius on? Lateral, right? So it's on the lateral side of the forearm. And like I said, there's a number of them there. And if we look at the size of all those muscles, right, which one is it? It is the long one. Right, so just by looking at this name, we can tell a whole lot about that particular muscle. All right, so here is maybe a list that maybe you should memorize. Right, it's actions of muscles by body compartment. Right, because the structure determines what the function is. Where it's located determines what the action is. So the anterior neck, right? Anterior neck, we had a muscle in the anterior neck, namely the sternocleidomastoids. When that contracts, that causes flexion of the cervical spine, or we could say head flexion. So what about then the opposite side of the neck, posterior neck? That's going to be for extension, and in lab you learn a muscle that will extend the head, and that is the splenius. So the muscle pairs maybe that you want to just write down here would be the sternocleidomastoid and splenius capitis, opposite body compartments. All right, muscles for working on the vertebral column, the flexors, right? Anterior trunk muscles, flexors. We talked about that. Oh, I'm actually showing that to you right now. What's a good flexor of the vertebral column? The rectus abdominis right here flexes the vertebral column. Where would we find an extensor for the vertebral column extension? Flip the body over, right? So it's going to be in the posterior trunk, and we talked about that muscle too. That is the erector spinae. Nice. Okay. Anterior arm. for forearm flexion. So forearm flexion would be the same thing as elbow flexion. We could talk about it in either way. So give me a muscle that causes flexion of the forearm or flexion of the elbow. Biceps brachii, brachialis, either one of those because they're in the same body compartment. Where would we find an antagonist to that? The posterior arm, right? So forearm extension or extension at the elbow would be the triceps. Probably pencil these things in. Anterior forearm muscles, right? So you have the carpi digitorum, right? And so the anterior forearm for flexion. Oh, because all the anterior muscles in the forearm are either for flexion of the wrist or flexion of the digits, which are your fingers. Those are all anterior. So where would you think about muscles that will extend the wrist or extend your fingers? Posterior, and don't forget about anatomic position. Okay. Extension and flexion of the leg. We looked at those. What about for extension of the leg? So where's your leg? Between your knee and your ankle. Right? Or extension at the knee. So what muscle extends at the knee or extends the leg? The quadriceps. That's the anterior thigh. So where do you want to think about muscles for flexion at the knee? Posterior thigh. And you know those are the hamstrings. Nice. All right. Well, I really want to talk about this just one more time, just so that you're really aware of an easy way to think about these muscles. Okay, you know dorsiflexion and plantar flexion. And that's a motion at the ankle. And maybe tell me something about plantar flexion. What is plantar flexion? Okay, plantar flexion is when you point your toes or the ball of your foot into the ground. All right, so right now I'm plantar flexing, and what did it look like? It looked like I got taller, right? Okay, because it's I'm lifting my whole body off the ground. That's plantar flexion. What's dorsiflexion? Just lifting your toes off the ground, right? Instead of pushing your toes into the ground. So that is dorsiflexion and plantar flexion. And where do we find these particular muscles at? Well, if they work on the ankle, right, they're going to be in the leg. And the muscles in the posterior leg are for plantar flexion. And we got a bunch of them. The biggest one right here is called the gastrocnemius. And there's one right underneath it. Maybe it would remind you of the biceps brachii and the brachialis. So they're in the same body compartment. The gastrocnemius and the soleus. It's not labeled on this slide, but I'm pointing to it. This is the soleus. Gastrocnemius and soleus are synergistic to each other. Okay, I do see it on this slide. Right here's the soleus underneath the gastrocnemius. So these are synergistic to each other, same body compartment. And these are important plantar flexors. Where would we want to find one for dorsiflexion? Yeah, anterior leg. Okay, so let's take a look at the anterior leg. See what we can find. What is this? Nice. Okay, so here, toes are pointing right at you, so this is the anterior leg. Here is the tibialis anterior, right next to the, it's covering up the, it's right next to the tibia. Okay, so here's the tibialis anterior. Tibialis anterior, gastrocnemius, soleus, they're antagonistic pairs because they're on opposite sides of the body. All right, so this is a really good list of ways to think about muscles. Here are some muscles, probably, that you should really pay attention to. All right, occipital frontalis, we've kind of looked at that before, right? And here is origin and insertion and action. The origin and insertion are part of the name. So the origin is the occipital bone, and the insertion is near the frontal bone, hence this name. And we know that it attaches to skin at the eyebrows. And so this muscle, when it contracts, elevates the eyebrows. All of that information you can just get from the name. Same thing for sternocleidomastoid. Right? Again, the origin and insertion is part of the name. The origin is first, so sternum and clavicle. The insertion is the mastoid process. And if one contracts, that causes rotation of the head. If they both contract, then that's flexion. Right? And I tell you what, just for fun, sternocleidomastoid causes neck flexion. What about an antagonist to this muscle? Well, how do you want to start thinking about an antagonist to this muscle? Sternocleidomastoid is anterior. An antagonist is going to be posterior. Those of you that have had lab, right, know a muscle. This insertion is exactly the same point, right? But the origin is going to be different. It's going to be on the back, and so that's going to cause extension. Anybody remember the name of that muscle that causes extension? Is the splenius. Did somebody say splenius? Sounded like you did. Okay. Trunk muscles. Rectus abdominis. And the origin is the pubic bone. The insertion is the xiphoid process. And that rectus abdominis, you know, right, that's the most anterior stomach muscle. And the action is flexing the vertebral column. We've talked about that, but let's look at this origin and insertion. When the rectus abdominis contracts, what moves? Does my pubic bone move, or does my xiphoid process move? Okay, that's right. So the pubic bone is stationary, the xiphoid process is moving. So the xiphoid process is what? The origin or insertion? Is the insertion, and the pubic bone is the origin. Okay, and that muscle is kind of upside down. Usually the origin and insertion are the other way around. Usually the origin is superior and the insertion is inferior, typically, certainly in muscles of the appendages, but not necessarily so for the trunk. Okay, upper limbs. Probably I will pull out a picture as we look at this. Well, there's a nice brachialis, coracobrachialis, and that's what I would like to see. All right, so the biceps brachii has two origins, right? So I see two heads right here. One comes from the coracoid process, and it goes across the shoulder. The other is from this little tubercle that's right on top of the glenoid fossa. And this is what we call the supraglenoid tubercle. That could be on the practicum because the biceps is an important muscle, and so that tubercle is important. Then here is the tendon of the long head going right between the tuberosities on the humerus. There's a little sulcus or groove right here. That's called what? The intertubercular groove, where the long head of the biceps goes. And then there is just a single insertion. And so on this list over here, we see the two origins, supraglenoid tubercle, choroid process, and then the insertion is on the, right here, radial tuberosity. All right, so when the biceps contracts, it pulls across the elbow, right? And what is the action going to be? When the biceps brachii contracts and it pulls on this radial tuberosity. The flexion of the elbow or forearm, but it also goes across the shoulder joint, so when the biceps contracts, it can also cause, what is that motion? Flexion at the shoulder, because it goes across both joints. And because it's kind of complicated like that, I don't like to call that the prime mover of forearm flexion, right? Because it also causes flexion at the shoulder. If we look at the brachialis, does it go across the shoulder? It does not. It only goes across the elbow, and so that's a more perfect muscle for flexion of the forearm. So the brachialis is the prime mover for forearm flexion. Really nice muscle that you'll see in lab is the coracobrachialis. And again, the origin and insertion are part of the name. So the origin is going to be the coracoid process on the scapula, and the insertion is on the medial aspect of the brachium or the arm. All right, so what is the action of this particular muscle? Remember, muscles can only get shorter. They can't push on anything. It's going to bring the arms to your side, which is adduction, right? So the corpobrachialis is for adduction, but it can also help in flexion a little bit when it shortens. So if the corpobrachialis helps in flexion, what is a synergist muscle to the corpobrachialis? What's another muscle that can flex at the shoulder? Is the pectoralis major. Say pectoralis major, corpobrachialis would be synergist. And they're almost in the same, well, they're not in, they're almost in the same body compartment. Okay. Triceps brachii. There are three heads. Now, if the long head of the biceps brachii attaches to the supraglenoid tubercle, if we're going to have a muscle that is antagonistic, I think you can rely on some symmetry principles to understand where the origin of the triceps is. Right, so if we look on the opposite side of the glenoid fossa, we're going to find another tubercle, and that's one of the origins of the triceps brachii. Do you kind of see that symmetry right there? And the triceps and biceps are going to be antagonistic to each other as a result of that. Okay, and the insertion of the triceps. Insertion of the triceps is going to be the olecranon process. And I don't have any kind of picture of that. Okay, but here would be the olecranon process of the ulna. So the triceps brachii is an important strong muscle for extension of the forearm. It works across the elbow joint, and so that would be the prime mover for forearm extension. Lower limbs, we talked about this. For instance, the gastrocnemius, that's in the posterior leg compartment, that's for plantar flexion. And it inserts into the calcaneus. And what do you know about the calcaneus? Let's see if we can review what the calcaneus is. I don't want to lose this slide, but maybe I would have to show you. Calcaneus, that is your heel bone. That's the bone that strikes the ground when you walk. That's the biggest tarsal. And that's what the gastrocnemius and soleus insert into. And when those contract, it pulls that posterior part of your foot up, which then points your toes into the ground, which is plantar flexion. Right, so soleus and gastrocnemius would be synergist muscles. So here is a, you could just memorize this list right here. That would help you probably answer a number of questions on the test in terms of synergist pairs, right, origins and insertions. That would be really easy to do. All right, and since I'm on this slide right here, I see a number of muscles. I see the scapula, and I see something that kind of looks like a rectangle that has been skewed just a little bit, and that's a special geometric figure when you take a square or a rectangle and kind of tilt it, right? So instead of having 90-degree angles, you have something a little less than 90 degrees. That's called a rhomboid. And so that's how these muscles got their name. Here's the major, here's the minor. And here is levator scapulae. It helps elevate the scapula. These muscles are fixators. All right, so they just hold the scapula in position so that the humerus can undergo a proper motion. All right. We have a number of muscles that go across the shoulder joint. And let me tell you what these are. Here's one above the spine of the scapula. That is the supraspinatus. Here is the infraspinatus fossa. So this is the infraspinatus, right? They all go across the shoulder. There's one more right here called the teres minor, right? And it participates in the shoulder joint. Here's the teres major, the most inferior one, but notice it doesn't really go to the shoulder. It goes a little bit below the shoulder. So that I don't want to consider that a muscle right at the shoulder, but that's an important adductor or rotator of the humerus. So we got supraspinatus, infraspinatus, teres minor, and there is one more. And that is the subscapularis, which you can't see because it's on the anterior side of the scapula. I don't know if I have a picture of the subscapularis. I don't have a picture of the subscapularis, so let's just go back here. All right, so as all of these muscles move across the shoulder joint, see all these tendons right here, tendons of the infraspinatus, supraspinatus, teres minor, and the subscapularis, right, all participate in making the joint capsule of the shoulder. So there is a lot of connective tissue right here, and they all join together with these different muscles. And it's relatively easy to damage that joint capsule. And when that joint capsule is damaged, we call that a rotator cuff tear, right? Because these muscles cause rotation, and the cuff means it's connective tissue around the whole shoulder joint. And so I do want you to know the names of the muscles that help make up the rotator cuff, because it's a very common injury, and how you could remember that. Let's see if I can turn on another light. That's the only light I got. All right, so the word that you want to use is sits. I guess that's a word, sits, that tells you the name of the muscles that make up rotator cuff. And so S right here could stand for two muscles, but let's pick one. What does this first S stand for? Okay, how about, I just picked one, subscapularis. I stands for infraspinatus. And T stands for, this is the tricky one, it's teres, but which one is it? It's the minor one, teres minor. And then lastly is the infra supra spinatus. All right, so these four muscles make up the rotator cuff, and it's not because of these muscles, but because of the tendons that come off of these muscles help make the joint capsule of the shoulder. So when any of these muscles are damaged, right, that damages all the connective tissue over the head of the humerus. And I think I mentioned one time what an easy way is to understand if the rotator cuff is damaged, and that is to flex at the elbow and see if you can perform a lateral rotation of the humerus, right? Because these are all rotators, so you would have somebody do a medial rotation, put your hand there, have them press on your hand to try to do a lateral rotation, and if it hurts really bad and they can't do it or scream in agony, then that's a pretty good sign that there's a rotator cuff. All right, so that's what I wanted to show you about the rotator cuff. All right, last time I couldn't get these animations working in Get Body Smart, and I would recommend that you look at some muscles in terms of synergists or antagonists in Get Body Smart, and the link is in Blackboard. And you know what? There has been a problem this week of students logging into Blackboard. Somebody did a programming error, it wasn't me, that erased a bunch of passwords. And so there are a number of students that couldn't get into Blackboard because their password was erased. If that is the case, you have to know, right, today, and maybe see me before lab or during lab, and I can change your password. And if you can't, then you have to send me an email, and I'll change it to student, and you can log in with a password student, and then in personal information, go ahead and change your password back to whatever you would like it to be. But make sure you check today whether or not you can log into Blackboard, because what's tomorrow? A quiz deadline. right? So make sure you can get to that quiz deadline. Hopefully you all have done that already, because maybe Blackboard is going to go down again. I'm not sure. So get that done as soon as you can. Plus, you probably want to use some of those exercises in Blackboard to prepare for the practicum and the lecture exam as well. Okay. So what do we got right here? Psoas muscle. So here is the psoas. This is a nice virtual dissection program. We can get rid of some of these other muscles and take a look and see what's happening. All right, so if we put in, I selected psoas major, iliacus, and psoas major. We like to think of one muscle. They actually have two different origins, so they're two different muscles, but since they're in the same body compartment, right, the anterior hip, they are synergists. They perform the same kind of motion. So let's just look at the psoas major, and look at that. Okay, so we got rid of a whole bunch of other muscles. Really nice and quick and fast. All right, so there is the psoas major, and when it contracts, right, it's going to pull up on this lesser trochanter. It's going to pull the lesser trochanter superiorly, and that's what we call flexion at the hip. So if we want to see what flexion at the hip looks like, we can just click on this, and our little guy is going to flex at the hip, right? So here is flexion. And if we want to look at the iliacus, let's see what we can do. How about iliacus? Is that activated? Nice. Oh, can I grab? I can't grab it. Oh, I did. Oh, come back here. Okay, so let's get rid of a bunch of these other muscles. So there is the iliacus. The insertion is the same place, the lesser trochanter. And when it contracts, it causes flexion at the hip. All right, well, where would we want to find extensors of the hip? So we can go back over here, extensors of the hip, opposite body compartment, and where we're looking right now is anterior hip or thigh. So let's go back even more. All right, so here was anterior thigh. We want to find something that looks like posterior thigh. Pull up some muscles for the posterior thigh, and look, here we have a nice posterior view of the thigh and hip muscles, and let's take a look at that gluteus maximus. All right, so there was nice gluteus maximus. All right, gluteus maximus. So when the gluteus maximus contracts, it's going to pull this posterior part of the femur posteriorly, and that's what we call extension. So right now, what position is the hip in on this little avatar? It's flexed, right? So it's flexed. So the gluteus maximus, right, is just going to straighten the leg out, like so. All right, so the iliopsoas and the gluteus maximus are antagonistic muscles because they're on opposite body compartments. Let's see what other kind of muscles we can find. Let's look in the leg. How do I get back? Muscles act on the back foot, act on leg. Let's see what we have. Okay, so muscles that act on the anterior leg, and it just so happens here is posterior leg, so these are going to be antagonistic to each other. Muscles in the same group are going to be synergists. So let's look at, that's not where I want to be. I want to look at, do we have foot? Act on leg, ankle and foot. Sorry, this is where I want to be. Okay, so anterior compartment muscles versus posterior leg compartment muscles. All of these muscles in the anterior compartment should be synergists to each other. All of these in the lower group should be synergists, but to each other they should be antagonists. So let's look at the gastrocnemius. All right, so here is a nice posterior view of the leg, and we're going to isolate on the gastrocnemius. Get rid of a bunch of these other muscles, and here is the gastrocnemius, and it inserts into the calcaneus. So this thing right here, this big long tendon, is called the calcaneal tendon. Sometimes it's called the Achilles tendon. You could call it either one. When the gastrocnemius contracts, it pulls the calcaneus superiorly, which then forces your toes into the ground. Forcing your toes into the ground is plantar flexion, And let's take a look at our little avatar right here, plantar flexion. Which way are those toes going to go? Down. And indeed they did. Okay, so plantar flexion. Let's look at another muscle in that group. And that is, so here's gastrocnemius, here's soleus. Soleus is going to be right underneath the gastrocnemius. So let's get rid of some of these muscles. All right, we're going to get rid of the gastrocnemius. And then here is the soleus, right underneath it. Let's see if we can get rid of maybe a couple other muscles. Nice. And here it comes back. So here is the soleus, and it inserts via the calcaneal tendon into the calcaneus. The insertion point is the same. The body compartment is the same. So the action should be the same. The toes should be, what, pointing into the ground when it contracts. Let's see if we can get dorsiflexion. Tibialis anterior. Fibularis, extensor hallucis, extensor digitorum. Let's look at tibialis anterior. All right, so here's the tibialis anterior. It's just, so here's the tibia. It runs right alongside the tibia and in some places anterior to it. It's also in the anterior leg. All right, so there is the anterior tibialis. And when it contracts, it's going to lift the toes up off the ground. Right, and there you can see it. You can also review origin and insertion, right, for maybe the lab practicum if you have to know origin and insertion for those muscles, which you can tell by looking at the tables. Okay, so opposite body compartments produce opposite motions. All right, muscles that act on the mandible. Let's see if we can find, I don't know if they've updated this to see if we have antagonistic muscles here. Well, you know what? We don't. All of these muscles either elevate the mandible, okay? None of them depress the mandible. Some of you might know that there is one little tiny muscle that can depress the mandible. All of these, like, let's look at the masseter. These elevate the mandible. Anybody remember from... Huh, look at that. Can't get in there. What about temporalis? Okay. Well, there's a masseter. What muscle can depress the mandible? Here we have temporalis and masseter. They elevate the mandible. What's that little dinky muscle? It's not in Get Body Smart, but it's noteworthy because it's antagonist to these very powerful muscles, the temporalis and masseter. So I do want you to know one little muscle that can depress the mandible. Anybody remember from lab? It's got two parts to it, and it is the digastric. Somebody said digastric. Yeah. And it's underneath the mandible, so we can't see it. So what are we looking at? Temporalis muscle. So here's the temporalis, and the origin is the temporal bone, right? The insertion is the coronoid process, which is about right over here. Let's see if we can get rid of some of these other muscles and take a look. All right, get this out of the way. Ah, look at that, right? So here is the coronoid process. That's the insertion for the temporalis. When this temporalis contracts, it pulls on the coronoid process, which elevates the mandible. And so let's see, can we get it to work? Oh, yeah, we can. Okay, so here is elevation. We don't have digastric programmed into Get Body Smart. And the masseter. Let's see if we can get the masseter working. Oh, no. Oh, yeah. Okay. It worked this time. So let's get rid of a bunch of these other muscles. So here's masseter. And when it contracts, right, it elevates the mandible. So the origin of the masseter is not the temporal bone, like the temporalis, but it's a zygomatic arch, right? And the insertion... right, is the lateral part of the mandible near the angle. And when it contracts, right, that elevates the mandible, just like so. We don't have very good muscles of the pterygoid, we don't have very good models of the pterygoid muscles. So Get Body Smart will be able to help us see some of these. Right. And the pterygoids, right? The origin of the pterygoids are on the pterygoid processes of the sphenoid bone, which I can see right here. And when these contract, right, so they aid in mastication, so you could say grinding, which would be a side-to-side motion. You could say elevation because they're important in mastication, but probably a grinding motion would be better. Right, so the pterygoids will cause that grinding for chewing food up. Right, and so that would be the lateral pterygoids and the medial pterygoids. Okay. Again, are important for grinding side to side. And so you could consider these synergists to the temporalis and masseter because they're both for chewing. Okay, so antagonistic pairs. Let's look at the shoulder. Okay, there is a muscle for flexion of the shoulder or flexion of the arm. Okay, and can you remember what flexion of the arm is? Muscles that act on the arm. Let's check this out. Nice. Okay. Flexion at the shoulder or flexion of the arm is when, right, you lift your elbow up anteriorly like that. So, but think of the shoulder. This is flexion. And we said pectoralis major right here is important for that. Let's get rid of some of these other muscles. Okay, and okay, so here is pectoralis major, and the insertion, see if we can find the insertion right here, okay, is this lateral edge of the intertubercular groove, right? It's just right below the greater tubercle, and it has a really broad origin. And if somebody asks you, like me in lab or something, what the origin is, you don't have to name all of these things. You could just say sternum or clavicle, right? And when this contracts, it has a couple motions. It can adduct, but it can also flex. All right, so what does adduction look like? Okay, when this contracts, it's going to pull the humerus down to the side, but it also is important for flexion of the shoulder. All right, so if the pectoralis is important for flexion, where would we want to look to find a muscle for extension? The posterior trunk. All right, and you know muscle in the posterior trunk, so let's go back and take a look. The example that we used was the latissimus dorsi right here. And let's get rid of a bunch of these other muscles, like so. All right, so here is the latissimus dorsi. And when it contracts, right, it's going to extend the arm. All right, so there is extension. Okay, but there's something else that the latissimus dorsi does. Let's go back to here. Get rid of a bunch of these. All right, so it's going to pull the arm back, but it's also going to pull the arm back down to the side. What do we call that motion when the arm comes back down to the side? That's adduction. All right, so let's see, can we adduct? Adduct the arm? Nice. Okay, so this is kind of an interesting muscle pair, right, because the pectoralis major causes flexion, the latissimus dorsi causes extension. So they're antagonists, but they are synergists for one particular motion that I showed you. They both will adduct the arm, right? Both will pull the arm back in towards center line. So sometimes a muscle or a pair of muscles can be synergists. Sometimes they can be antagonists depending on what the motion is. And the way that you would recognize that is just by their location. By their location. Okay, you don't have to know the names of nerves that innervate various muscles. Sometimes that's important, but not this semester. And I think that's really all I want to show you about Get Body Smart. Okay? But I would definitely go in there and pick out some muscles that are antagonistic pairs, look at their origin insertion, and especially origins and insertions that are in your lecture notes right here. Okay? Make sure that you can, so if you want to find the origin of the biceps brachii, how would you do that? Well, look at the muscle system, right? The biceps acts on the forearm. Let's take a look. Anterior forearm act on the posterior forearm. So let's look at the biceps brachii. And we can move our slider over and get rid of a bunch of these muscles. Right, and if I move it just back one notch, okay, the origin looks like red to me, and the insertion is blue. So we can actually see these two points, and lightly penciled in is a profile of the muscle itself. All right, so the two origins, we got the coracoid process and the supraglenoid tubercle, origin for the biceps brachii, and the insertion is that radial tuberosity, and it also connects to some connective tissue over here by the ulna, but you can just say the radial tuberosity. And what can it do? It can flex. Now, since we're at the forearm part of this program, we're going to see it flexing at the forearm, right? But it can also flex at the shoulder. If it flexes at the shoulder, then it's going to be synergistic to the pectoralis major muscle, right? Because they're both anterior compartment muscles. All right, so use Get Body Smart to maybe get a good picture in your mind of where these origins and insertions are. That can be handy. And let's go back one. What about triceps? So he said the triceps has three origins. Let's see if we can get them to stand out in their particular colors. All right, so here is the long head, infraglenoid tubercle. Okay, inserts all the way down here to the olecranon process. And can we find some others? Okay, there is another one. And we can't see the third one because it's deep. It's just on a whole line on the humerus. Okay. Okay, so we talked about triceps, latissimus dorsi, rotator cuff muscles. Just remember this one down here is teres major. And what else did we want to look at? We looked at stomach muscles, and I don't want to look at the forearm muscles. Okay, I think I have one more group of muscles that I would like to talk about. Here is a muscle that separates the thoracic cavity from the abdominal cavity, and we're looking up from the abdominal cavity up into the thoracic cavity, and this muscle is dome-shaped, and does anybody remember the name of that muscle that separates thoracic from abdominal cavity? The diaphragm, right? So here is the diaphragm, and it's skeletal muscle, so you can control when it contracts, and there's a part of your brain that can also control it automatically so that when you're sleeping you don't have to think about breathing, but that basically, nonetheless, it's still a skeletal muscle because it's under voluntary control. So here is the diaphragm, and it's the prime mover for inspiration. So I probably should jot that down. Diaphragm. I wish I had a better picture of the diaphragm. Okay, so the diaphragm would be right about in this location here. And when it contracts, that helps inhalation. And there are some other muscles that are involved with that as well. Let's take a look at some of these other muscles. expiration. All of these abdominal muscles are important for expiration, including the rectus abdominis, the transverse, right, the internal and external oblique. Because when these muscles contract, that forces the contents of the abdominal cavity up into the thoracic cavity, and that helps push air out of our lungs. Right, so the stomach muscles are important for expiration. There are some other muscles that are important. There are muscles between the ribs, and these are called intercostal muscles. And they're named just by how they are located, either superficially or deep to each other. So the external are the most superficial, the internal are a little bit deeper. Right? But notice the fascicle arrangement. But can you tell me about the fascicle arrangement? Are they exactly parallel? They actually are what? They're kind of crossed over each other, right? So their orientation is different. When the external intercostals contract, it pulls the rib cage out to the side, and it will also pull the sternum up and out like that. And when that happens, when the external intercostals contract, it increases the volume of the thoracic cavity, and that causes inspiration. So jot that down. External intercostals are important for inspiration. What's another muscle important for inspiration? The diaphragm, right. So the diaphragm and external intercostals, you could think of those as being synergist muscles, both for inspiration. Right, now let's look at the arrangement of these internal intercostals. When it contracts, it's going to pull the sternum back down, and it's going to pull the ribs back down, and that's going to force air out of your thoracic cavity. And so the internal intercostals are for expiration. So the external and internal intercostals are antagonistic to each other. Internal intercostal is antagonistic to the diaphragm. So this is kind of strange, right? So the externals are important for inspiration, and the internals are important for expiration. So this, the in and ex don't match up. The external and internal refer to just whether which muscle is superficial and deep, and not inspiration or expiration, right? So you all see that the external are for inspiration, and the internals are for expiration. They might have those in Get Body Smart as well. All right, so those are muscles for breathing. The most important ones that we went over were diaphragm, okay, and internal and external intercostals, and all of the abdominal muscles. All of the abdominal muscles for expiration. Okay, well, let's stop and maybe ask some questions. Anybody have any questions? Study guides are okay. Questions in the online usually have pretty good feedback from those. Answers in the back of the book for end of chapter questions. Oh, I hear a question, yeah. Oh, I'm still thinking about that. I am. Okay, well, so what do you need next time? Don't forget your Scantron, a pencil, and more importantly, a really good eraser, right? To make sure you don't have any stray marks on your Scantron so that it can be graded properly. And also, don't forget your picture ID, please, a picture ID. And that's all you'll need. I'll try to get down from lab fast, so that maybe we can get an early start on taking the test. So come over early, and as soon as you come in the room, the test will be live and you can start working on it. Let's do it. Fix it.